Good evening and welcome to Eroticism Magazine's weekly podcast. My name is Kevin, the erotic photographer, and I'm your host. This season so far, I've had a lineup of incredible guests from the adult entertainment industry, from porn stars to cam models and content creators. On February 16th, Eroticism Magazine celebrated 15 years since we first launched in Spanish, and 14 plus years that we were free to the readers and proudly served as a tool to promote aspiring and accomplished ladies from sex workers to swingers and hot wives. Eroticism Magazine also proudly covered erotic events including Sex Expo in Mexico City, Black Tape Artist events, gay pride marches, and the famous Miss Mexico Gay for over 8,000 monthly readers in both languages. Now, for all our new listeners, eroticism is something that has the quality or character of being able to arouse sexual excitement or feelings. Now, this quality may be found in many forms of artwork, including paintings, photography, drama, films, music, literature, and of course, in today's advertising. Now, I have said that eroticism is a state of sexual arousal or sexual excitement, an insistent sexual impulse, desire, or pattern of thoughts, or the anticipation of it. It also refers to one's ability to experience sexual thoughts and desires. And tonight's special guest is CEO and creative director of Art Alt Erotic. He's a two-time AVN and X-Rated Critics Organization Best Web Director, not only an adult content producer, but also a horror film maker, Ivan Seiderman. Good evening, Ivan, and welcome.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing good. I hope you're doing well as well.
Yes. Everything's okay in LA, nice and warm.
Good. So first, tell us a little bit about you. Where are you from? How old are you? A little personal background on Ivan.
So I'm 52 years old. I'm a Russian Jew who came out here with my parents in 1979 during the Cold War. I watched my parents for 2 years go to night school to learn English. And so I learned my work ethic and dedication to whatever I'm going to do through them. When I was in high school, I was taking a lot of art classes. I wanted to be an artist. So I went to a commercial art school after high school and quickly realized I love the motion picture rather than just regular pictures. And picking up my first VHS camera back then, Panasonic VHS recorder is the camera that I picked up. And from that point on, I went to a college and studied film theory and film history. Then I went to a prestigious photography school, got my bachelor's degree in cinematography. And then within a few years, I was heavily deep in doing adult movies, horror movies as a labor of love with my filmmaking partners. And to pay my bills, I was shooting horror movies, but spelled WHO horror movies. So 20 years later, I'm still in it, doing it, and I love it. I love the lighting part of it. I love the creative part of it. I love working with new talent where I could mentor some people. That's it. I try to do it the right way. I've always said, am I allowed to swear on this? I don't know if I'm allowed to swear.
Absolutely, yeah, you can swear.
Okay, so I always tell everybody, I'm not here to fuck you, and I'm not here to fuck you over. I'm here to shoot cool shit, treat you with respect, and move on with our day, so... That's what I do. And I call myself the Russian Viking King because with my beard, people was like, oh, you look like a Viking. So I go for the moniker of Russian Viking King, and a logo that's got me on there, a cartoon of me with a hat with horns on it. I wear crazy outfits to all the award shows and events, and a lot of my outfits have blinged out Viking horns coming out of the hat. So just having a good time doing it.
We have to be who we are.
Yes. You know, if you have to wake up in the morning and hate what you do, I can't imagine that. I haven't had that feeling any morning in the last 20 some years. So I can't complain at all.
Yeah, I feel the same. I've never had that feeling that I hated getting up and going to work, whether it was for a 5 o'clock in the morning, you know, opening the door for the makeup people, or whether it was to be out at a location at 6 a.m. Man, it's what you're passionate about. It's what you got to do.
Yeah, because then it's not a job. It's really just you being you. You wake up in the morning and you might hate the part of waking up in the morning, but you don't hate the process of what you're going to be doing. That's why people are always like, how can you work 16, 20 hour days? I'm like, I'm not working. That's not work for me. That's passion. And if it requires manual labor, that means it's exercise. So I don't look at it as manual labor when I'm setting up equipment, because I'm usually like one-man crew. I look at that as exercise to get to the means of being creative. So I don't mind doing it all. I love it. I try to be around people that love it, because then you become a team, and it's a team effort. And it never works. It's just like a big family hanging out together and creating.
Exactly. I mean, the minute I just feel that people, the minute that you feel, you know, bad about getting up and going to work and doing what you do, it's time to change jobs. It's time to look for something that you're passionate about and something that you can go and do and enjoy and not feel like you're actually going to work.
Right. You know, because at the end of the day, when we die, we can't die with our wallets. So if you're,
exactly.
If you're working your whole life to have some sort of clout with your wallet, it doesn't matter, because we're all going to die. And to me, I'd rather die happy and being creative. I've told people, I'd rather die on set. I want to die on set. Like, I want to die having a heart attack right there in the middle of the set, because I'm creating, I'm doing something fun, rather than being bitter, working, you know, like a 9-to-5 and then going home and being pissed off that some guy above me, you know, is a, some kid out of college who's like lecturing me on stock shelves or something like that. Never.
No, it's not my thing. Flipping hamburgers or whatever it may be, just to have, you know, a couple bucks in your pocket. You know, when I was in New York, I mean, people don't realize, when I was in New York, I actually had to live in my car for 2 months. Oh. I mean, I was, when you're starting out in, you know, photography, you're starting out in cinematography, whatever you're starting out in, whether you're a model, you're an aspiring actress, there's going to come a time, or there could come a time, when you're not going to have, you know, money to eat, you're not going to have money to pay your rent. And I mean, I consider myself blessed. You know, I had the experience of not having a place to live and having to sleep in my car and keep my equipment in my car until I saved up enough money to get a cheap place to rent, you know, and then you move up from there. I went from being in the car to being in a boarding house. Mm-hmm. And from the boarding house into my loft and studio. So yeah, I mean, it's a process. But do I regret it? No, not at all.
You know, it makes you humble enough to appreciate what you have. People that have everything handed to them, they don't appreciate it. They don't understand the hard work that goes into that craft. You know, like every indie filmmaker I know, they either start off living with a bunch of friends, or, you know, living in really poor areas and eating, living off cup of noodles. It's just something you do for the passion of it. And most, like, indie filmmakers and photographers that love the art, they're not rich. They love what they do, and that's that food for the mind and the brain is so important. And for people who are not creative, or people who don't aspire to create something, they just don't understand the passion. And every piece that you put together, how important it is to you. I'll give you a quick example. So, like, you know, when I make either adult or regular movies that we do, I always cut clean trailers and do something really cool. And to me, my trailers are like my passion. So I would be showing a trailer to somebody who doesn't create, doesn't shoot, doesn't edit, doesn't write, doesn't do anything. And halfway through the trailer, they're like dozing off, looking different directions, looking at their phone. And that's the most disrespectful thing you could do to somebody who's a creative person, because that what they're showing you is their blood, sweat, and tears. And if you don't get that, then of course your mind's going to wander, because you lose it. Your attention span is not there. If you're somebody who creates, you're going to, even if you, whatever you're watching, it sucks to you, you will give it the due respect of watching it and giving your 2 minutes or whatever the trailer is to watch it and appreciate it and show the respect to that person who put it together. And that to me are the people I want to be around all the time.
Exactly. You don't want to be around people that are just geared into one thing. You know, they're geared into money. They've got no creative thoughts whatsoever.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like they used to say, to be successful, you have to surround yourself with successful people. Well, it's the same thing with art. You know, whether you're talking about a painter, whether you're talking about digital artists, whether you're talking about photographers or filmmakers, you want to surround yourself with the people that are passionate about the industry. You don't want to surround yourself with people who are only interested in how much can I make if I do this, how much am I going to make if I do that. Because they're not being creative. They're looking at the economic side of it. You know, it's not their passion.
Yeah, exactly. And if you're creative and you're around the creative community, it's like you're bouncing off ideas off each other. You're creating together, and that's priceless. That's a priceless thing to have. And because there are people around you strictly that are not creative, it drags you down because your creative energy is gone. You need to have the creative energy built through other people that have the same type of energy and passion.
Yeah, and I actually had a friend ask me a couple of weeks ago. He said, "You know, he said, why do you do shit for free?" And I'm like, "I do shit for free that I enjoy. If I want to do it for free, if it's, you know, whether it, I mean, I did a short film. I did the director of photography for a short film of an aspiring guy who was in college studying cinematography, and he needed a lighting guy." And, you know, a friend of mine said to me, "Hey, he needs a lighting guy, but he's got no money." I was like, "I don't care."
Right.
That's fine. I'll go.
It's funny you say that, because when I was going to film school, in my a little over three years, I worked on 55 projects. That's besides my own projects. I was out there working on everyone's projects. I would drive back to LA from Santa Barbara to work on projects outside of school. And I loved it. What you learn also on every piece of art that you work on is so important. And the people you meet and the camaraderie that you get, it's amazing. You know, like when after I graduated from film school, the guy who I helped out wound up firing his dolly grip just to hire me on back-to-back features. I felt bad the other guy lost the job, but I was happy that he hired me because I was right out of film school and I made a good impression on him because I wasn't asking for money. I just wanted to work. To this day, like this past weekend, Misha Montana, my fiance, and I, we went and worked for XPW, which is a wrestling promotion that's owned by Rob Black, who used to own Extreme Associates in the industry, and this wrestling promotion. He recently brought it back. I offered my services. So did she. She wanted to be part of the storylines. I took some of the most I've ever taken in my life because it was such an amazing visual event, and I didn't get paid for it, and I didn't even care. People are like, "Are you getting paid for it?" I'm like, "No, I offered my services because I want to do this because I think this would be really cool experience, and he needs it because I'm sure his budget's just out of control on what he had to put together. I'm not here to make a buck off of him. I just want to help somebody who's working their ass off to do something cool, and I get to be part of the process, and I get to create." And some of these visuals that, oh, priceless. So yeah, sometimes it's not about the buck. That dollar or the $10, whatever you make, it's gonna be gone in a day or two. But the experience and the memories are, you can't buy those. You cannot buy those. And I think people don't get that sometimes.
Yeah, and a lot of times too, what people don't understand, it's not always about that initial dollar and cents thing. Sometimes it's about the networking that occurs when you do these projects. You know, you might go and you might be working for a particular director, and then you meet other producers. It happened to me in 2018 when a friend of mine asked me. He said, "Hey, would you come and do a sex club setup? We need to set up a sex club in this spa. Would you come and do it for the final episodes of this of a Netflix telenovela?" And I was like, "Yeah, I'll do that." He was like, "You're into the erotic." He said, "You know how to do this, so come and set it up for me." And I went, and from there, you know, I got connected with other producers and other directors and actresses and actors that were in this novella, and you know, and so that sort of bled out into other areas.
It's interesting you say that. That's literally just what happened with this wrestling thing, because I've shot like a couple of wrestling things here and there, but never on the scale and never with this type of talent, in-ring talent. And I had almost over a half a dozen wrestlers reach out to me, because when I was taking and it was only a handful of pictures I took of each one backstage. I tried to make it very dramatic, moody, kind of like UFC lighting. And Dave obviously never had that. And I would show them the pictures. And so many of them just recently in the last couple of days hit me up. "Great to meet you. Thank you for the images. I've never seen anything like this. every single one that I talked to at the event asked me if this is what I do for a living, where am I located, you know. And I tell them, and I'm honest with them, I go, look, I shoot porn, but I'm trying to do more of this stuff. And, you know, obviously they're not going to care that I do porn. And,
some people don't care.
Yeah, exactly. And especially, like, I think, like, especially in like the independent wrestling circuit, they don't care because they're the stepchildren of mainstream wrestling. So they're not going to judge people of adult, for you would hope. It's sprung into all these people hitting me up, like finding me on Instagram, hitting me up and thanking me for the pictures. And I was nervous taking pictures of them just because I watched them on television and I wasn't sure how they were going to react to me. But then when I showed them one picture out of the ticket, they're like, whoa, that's really cool. Because they don't know. I could be a hack. I could be just like someone's friend coming in and doing some photos.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, but when they see the actual visual, they're just like, oh, wow, okay, you know what you're doing and you're trying to do something different. And to me, I just want to do different. I don't, you know, like, especially in porn, so many, especially when I first got in, so many people were just over-lighting everything, which I get because you got to see it all. But I've always believed in, you could tell a story, not with just light, you could tell a story with shadows. You used to tell a story with angles. And people in porn were afraid of shadows. And I actually had a reviewer once say that I tell more of a story with my shadow play, and which to me was a really great compliment because, yeah, when
it
I
is.
The next part, I made sure everything is seen and the shadows are not coming up, the penetration, whatever it may be. But to get to that point, I want to tell a really cool story with sometimes not even words, shadows, angles, and light and color. And to me, it's a passion. And the beauty, and that to me, that the beautiful part about it is that, especially in the last 5-6 years where I've been in total control of what I can do, I've shot some of my best stuff just because the models are just like, do whatever you want. I'm just here for you to create with. And it's wonderful when you can work with people that have the trust in you and they want your style. That right there, to me, is priceless. Just to be that, I used to be known as just as that. He's that really nice director who dresses really crazy and weird to events, and he's really good. He's not creepy. To now, dude, your lighting is something that I want, and I love that. And it's literally because I have all the control in what I can do, and that's that. That to me is just like that. It makes adult even more fun than just shooting blown out sex, you know. And anyone and their mother could just, you know, pop up some lights and shoot some sex. But if you want to tell a story or do something creative, that takes a little bit more effort.
I mean, I'm here with a big smile on my face from the my listeners. You know, I've talked about this with other porn stars, with other directors. Everything today, I mean, the mentality today of so many production companies is, you know, bright lights, you know, lots of illumination. I mean, I don't know if you've ever seen any of the productions called The White Box. I mean, literally, it's like they put the actors in a white box, uh-huh. You know, white curtains, white bedspread, heavily illuminated.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, it's just literally you're looking at a white box of porn. And there's no ambiance, you know. And what I tell people is, I would love to see porn start evolving back to where it was in the 70s, and, you know, where the European porn was back in the 60s from Italy, from France, you know, actually having some ambiance, you know, understanding that the job of the lighting director, you know, I'll say lighting director because many of you people don't realize that when we say director of photography, we're actually talking about the guy who does lighting, you know. And so your job is to make the viewer feel like they're actually there. So if you overlight a scene or you underlight a scene, they're not going to feel like they're there in the moment. I mean, if it's a nighttime scene in the bedroom, you have to create a nighttime scene in the bedroom, maybe a little table lamp. There's so much that you can do.
Yeah.
But today people's imagination, I mean, well, porn, and I'm not saying everybody, if you've ever seen what Adult Time and Brie Mills is doing with her new productions, I mean, she's actually got the idea of what creating the, you know, the ambiance is. And she's making it into porn, and it's actually good porn. I did a review of one of her productions, and I mean, I love her work.
Yeah.
I think that she's really got the concept. And that because she's a very creative person. She went from being an actress to, you know, from being a porn actress to being a producer. Now she's created all these little different niches and stuff. And I mean, she's just doing really well. Now, most male always ask me, how did you get into adult and working with extreme associates? You know, whether they want to be a porn star, whether they want to be a photographer, whether they want to be a director, the guys always seem to ask me, you know, how do I do it? Can you connect me? So how did you start? What got your motor running into adult?
You know, it's so funny because, yeah, I get those all the time. And especially the guys that are like, oh, you know, I could tear a girl up and things like that. And what you need to do is, you might think that you're good in bed or whatever it may be. You need to get a couple of your friends just to stand around while you're with your girlfriend and see if you can handle that, because you're not going on a set where there's nobody there. There's going to be anywhere between 1 and 8 or something people there watching you, and then you have to stop and go. And a lot of people don't understand that and don't understand you have to pay your dues. These days, everybody wants everything handed to them on a silver platter. Oh, I'm pretty, give me money. Basically, I think that's that stupid OnlyFans mentality where you think that you have quick money coming in. There's no such thing as quick money in any aspect. You have to build a brand. You have to build a reputation. And I came from mainstream. And to me, in the mainstream world, your last project is your portfolio to your next project. And that's the mentality I brought into adult. I was working on a TV show called The X Show on FX Networks. I was a video utility guy, which basically I just held someone's cable. A cameraman's cable. I took my little brother, my brother was 15 years old, I took him to a local wrestling show, which is now back. It's called XPW, Extreme Pro Wrestling, and they had a deathmatch tournament. Never heard of it. We wanted to go and check. We went there, and it was the most insane, amazing, crazy, gory thing I've ever seen in my life. I went back to the TV show, and one of the hosts on the TV show, his name is John Weber, was a huge wrestling fan. So I brought it up to him. The next show, I brought him to the wrestling show, and he hit it off with the people that owned it, which was Rob Black and Tom Byron. Tom Byron's a legendary porn performer. Rob Black, infamous, big-time porn producer, director, who owned Extreme Associates and owned its wrestling promotion. So they started bringing Rob, I think it was actually just Lizzie Borden, his now ex-wife, to FX Network's TV show to do like little skits, porno skits, things like that. And I got friendly with them, so did my brother. So my brother started doing the wrestling website because he was underage. You couldn't do anything for their adult stuff. And I would shoot like little ringside stuff. And eventually my brother turned 18. They hired him to be an editor. They brought me in to shoot behind the scenes because I was between jobs. And they did some of my ringside work. A ringside camera work and editing. So they brought me in to shoot behind the scenes. And when I first got in, I'm like, I'm gonna go back to mainstream and I would be a mainstream director because I've been doing like short horror films with my filmmaking buddies for years. And so I was like, kind of like, I don't want to use my real name. I want to come up with a fake name and do this for a little bit just to pay my bills. And at least back then, you know, I quickly realized that back then the directors didn't know what the hell they were doing. They could barely white balance a camera, let alone hold a good shot, do any sort of lighting, any sort of cool angles. They were just pornographers who became directors, you know, or performers who became directors. They weren't necessarily artists behind the camera who either went to film school or come from film making background. And I did. And one day I was like, screw this, I want to jump full bore. So I reached out to... And I came off a set where there was a director on set who went and was directing porn, went and started directing rap music videos, and then came back to directing adult, and he was atrocious. He was a very nice guy, but completely didn't know what he was doing. His stuff was horrendous. I called one of my bosses, on the way back home, and I said, whatever you guys are paying him, I could shoot circles around this man for half the rate, because I knew he was getting paid a lot. And they gave me an opportunity to shoot a scene. I was beyond nervous. I was so nervous, I wanted to crash my car into a tree just to have an excuse. I was so scared because, you know, people don't understand, especially back then. Now, like, with OnlyFans and it's all the social media, people are more comfortable with the sex part of it. But back then, 20 years ago, you're walking onto a set, the two people you don't know, they're going to have sex in front of you, and you have to tell them what to do. Not only tell them what to do, you have to stop them mid-sex sometimes and go, like, don't do that or do this. And for me, as a regular person, I wouldn't even talk to my friends about jerking off. Now I'm now in front of people having sex, and I'm in charge of them. That's scary, you know. And I didn't work enough on sets to get comfortable doing it. You know, like, you should be able to work on enough sets where you're comfortable shooting something, technically know what you're doing, technically know what you should on camera, sex wise. And I shot my first scene, and it was a nightmare because it was so nerve-wracking. But then when I got comfortable, I started shooting really, really unique things. And it was literally just paying my dues. I shot probably 2 dozen, I would say close to 2 dozen bonus scenes. And bonus scenes back then, now companies are pretty much, DVD companies are pretty much dead. But back then, when money was falling out of the tree, even for like the smallest companies, companies would shoot 5 to 6 scenes per movie. And if you were, well, if you had enough money and you want to really impress your viewers, you shot a bonus scene. So for your DVDs, if you're buying my DVD, not my VHS, you get a bonus scene. That's a brand new scene that goes into the bonus section. So I wound up shooting anywhere between 12 to 24 bonus scenes for different movies. And when I got really comfortable shooting scenes, because they're bonus scenes, you know, they're not worried about the quality necessarily or budget part of it. When I got comfortable enough, Rob Black and Tom Byron let me start shooting what I wanted to shoot. So I wound up doing a movie called Texas Asphalt Massacre with my ex. And I'm a huge horror fan. I come from the horror filmmaking background, so I wanted to do... And it's not a parody. It's more of like a spoof of Texas Asphalt Massacre. There's no Leatherface, but there is a scene at the end of the movie where we recreate the Leatherface chainsaw chase through the forest and the Leatherface chainsaw dance at the end, but with a 3-foot dildo rather than a chainsaw. And that put me on the map. That put me on the map with AVN. Got a ton of nominations, a few awards from different magazines and award shows. I got offered a huge company. One of the big feature companies offered me a directing job off of Texas Asphalt Massacre, which I declined because I'm very loyal who I work for. But there was a lot that went on, and it was literally because I got comfortable enough to start shooting and honing my skills. And you know, like, just because somebody's horny and wants to get into porn doesn't mean they can direct, because you still, especially these days,
there's or no act.
Yeah, or act, especially be on camera. That's so tough, because for a girl can fake it, a guy can't fake it. And I'm sure you know, there's plenty of guys in our industry that either have to put a pump inside their penis, or they have to shoot something into their penis, or Viagra, Cialis, Blue Chew, whatever it may be, because it's tough. It's not like you're showing up and here's a hot girl and you guys having sex for 20 minutes. No, you show up and you're probably having sex with her up to 2 hours stop and go, depending on the production. So it's not an easy thing. People just assume people show up, you know, do a lot of partying and have sex and move on, and that's not reality whatsoever. It's just because you see something on social media doesn't make it real. When you see sometimes on a DVD or on the scene, doesn't mean it's real. Tom Cruise is not really flying a plane into a mountain, you know?
No, or jumping off of a 47-story building.
That's exactly it. You know, this is a fantasy. It's fantasy world. But to create that fantasy takes a lot of work and a lot of people. And knowing your craft, that's the part that just, you know, there's so many people. I think the issue is so many people these days shoot their pro-am porn on their cell phones or on the camera on the tripod. So all of a sudden they think they're, you know, you'll see this all the time. I'm a producer. You know, I own my own company. Like, realistically, what does it take to be quote unquote a producer and a company owner? It takes $10 on GoDaddy to create an account with a .com. And all of a sudden you have a website name, and all of a sudden you're a producer because you shot something with your cell phone. That doesn't make you anything but that. It doesn't make you a talented creator, content creator. It doesn't make you an actual director or producer. It just makes you somebody that spent $10 on a domain name and a couple of $100 on the cell phone or cheap GoPro. But if you really want to do it the right way and stand out where you will make money or get hired, you have to know your craft. You have to know what you're doing. And the saving grace for me is I know how to light and shoot. Otherwise, I would lose out to all these cell phone shooters. So,
well, people don't understand that, you know, the biggest, everybody wants to go out and buy the biggest and best camera in the market, but the camera doesn't make the director, the producer, or the filmmaker. It's the lighting and quality. Actually, quality of image a lot of times depends more on the lens and the lighting than it does on the actual camera.
It's completely true, because I don't use superior equipment. I use older cameras, but I use a lot of times older lights. But I know how to light. I understand depth of field. I understand what f-stops and shutter speeds do, and ISO. I understand when you move your f-stop this direction or this other direction, what depth of field you're creating, or lack of focus, or whatever it may be. These are things that are crucial, and especially for lighting. You know, I've worked with so many photographers, I shit you not, that don't know the difference between daylight and tungsten, and it kills me. And I'm just like, because they'll shoot, it's digital now, so they just look at, oh, I don't like that, let me switch it to another to daylight or tungsten to see if that fixes it. But they don't know, they don't understand Kelvin temperatures. They don't understand what the lens actually does. I had one photographer who had a 1/8 lens and wanted to sell it because couldn't understand, why would I need a 1/8 lens that's a 50 millimeter when I have a zoom lens? I'm like, do you understand if you shoot a 1/8, what you could actually create with that?
Exactly.
No.
My 1.4, I would never give up my 1.4s. You know, you have an 85 millimeter 1.4 and a 50 millimeter 1.4. And I mean, it's not for every situation, but it's a great lens for creating dramatic effects, whether you're talking about, you know, backgrounds or foregrounds.
Mm-hmm.
But the photographers today aren't photographers. I think that's the first thing that you know, we need to understand, is that so many photographers today are just Uncle Toms that went out and they bought themselves a camera and they hung a shingle on their door and it says, I'm a photographer. They put their camera on automatic and they shoot away. You know, and they charge very little money for doing like weddings and events and things like that. And but what the couples don't realize is that this person has no experience, no training, no official training. So he's going to throw a flash on his camera. You know, he knows nothing about off-camera flash. He knows nothing about, you know, the day, you know, daytime is 5,500 degrees Kelvin. If we're talking about tungsten, we're looking at 32. Yeah. You know, these guys know absolutely nothing. And they have no idea what changing, you know, the camera settings for temperature, for lighting temperature. Guys, I've told you this 100 times. Lighting in photography and video, it's a temperature. You know, and by changing the temperature of the lighting, you can actually change effects. There are some great effects that you can create just by changing lighting and existing lighting or artificial lighting conditions. But people, you know, I mean, today's industry is that we have so much focus on commercial, or not commercial, but on personal use cameras that are so much like the, you know, the real ones. I've even seen guys go out and buy, you know, a Canon 5D Mark IV, you know, a $4,000 camera. They go out and they buy it, but they don't know what the hell they're doing with it. They put it on automatic and, you know, and they shoot away.
You know, it's funny you say that, because like, I got two quick stories about it. So we used to have an intern at my company. I own a company called Puba, where we do porn star websites.
I know Puba very well. I actually have seen a lot of the productions from Puba.
Yeah, so I'm the one who does everything for it. And then we had this photography intern that came in, and he wanted to learn photography. He was like this rich kid from Canada who used to play semi-pro hockey, got injured, now wants to learn photography. So he would come in. And he would come in to set to help us out, dressed like he's going to a party. leather jacket, nice pants. They were like, I'm like, what are you doing? Because he was like, I'm sweating. I'm like, yeah, because you're not dressed for work. So I would sit with him with the dry race board, and I would write out all the F-stops. I'd write out shutter speeds, and I would try to train him. And one day he goes to me, he goes, you know, this is so boring. He goes, can you just teach me how to be a Maxim photographer? That's literally what he said to me. I want to be a Maxim photographer. I go, how are you going to be a Maxim photographer? You can't even, you don't even know F-stops. And then his last day with us, he comes in and we're doing pictures of Charlie Chase. I remember actually the day we had this locker room set. She was dressed as a Lucha Libre wrestler, taking pictures of her. He walks up to me with a cell phone, click, takes a picture and shows him. He goes, look how cool that is. And you know what it was? It was when Instagram first started. He was on Instagram and he put an Instagram filter on it. And he goes, look what I just did. I go, what did you do? He goes, look at this picture I just took. I go, no, you did not. I go, I lit that. I go, you took a picture with your cell phone and you put a filter on it on some app that no one's ever heard of. Well, now obviously Instagram's huge, but back then we didn't know. And he goes, well, I don't need any more training. I'm just going to be an Instagram photographer. That's what he said to me, an Instagram photographer. And I was like, okay, whatever, man. And he never came back. He was a nice guy, but he was the typical, which you were just saying, typical people who just pick up a camera, put it in all auto or use some sort of a filter. And they think that, you know, how many of these people think that an iPhone camera is the same thing as a $50,000 camera? I heard two male performers on set a few years ago talking about they had the new iPhone, whatever it was. And they're like, you know, you could buy this wide angle adapter for the lens. It costs like $50. And then you have your content camera. And I looked at them and I go, you guys haven't figured out. I'm not sure why NBC spends 50 to 100 grand on the camera when they could just buy a bunch of iPhones and shoot their TV shows with it. And they just looked at me with their drool coming down their face, just like, what? And I was like, yeah, exactly, what? Are you kidding me? You know, so, but that's that mentality. It's that quick buck, quick, like,
the OnlyFans mentality.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, and it's frustrating. I get it for people who don't understand and they just want a quick buck. I totally understand. But if you care about the quality of your visuals and quality of your branding, you do it the right way. You know, like I know a lot of girls who shoot mostly for their OnlyFans and they hire real photographers, real videographers, and it costs them a lot of money, but they care about their brand to have beautiful visuals out there because you're still a fantasy. You're not the girl next door who just came home from Starbucks and sat down on your couch with your ring light and your phone and shot something. No, you're a fantasy to people. And I think that a lot of it's gotten lost. But yeah, the technical part, there's just, once digital kicked in, so much of the technical part went away because people just bracket. When I was going to photography school, it's funny now because back then it was like us motion picture majors would have these beefs with the photography majors, and whenever we would argue, our motion picture student comeback always was, well, you guys have 36 exposures to get one image right. We're shooting 24 images per second that are moving. And then it would like shut down the whole the whole argument.
Well, it's what people don't understand. You know, today's mentality is like at a wedding, I'll shoot 500 pictures and if 100 come out great, I'm happy.
Yeah.
You know, and in the old days, you know, back in the 80s when I was working mainstream photography, you had a fashion shoot or you had a model shoot, and yeah, of course you've got 12 shots, but you don't want to, you know, pay to have 12 shots developed if they're bad. You know, if 10 of them are bad or 11 of them are bad, you want every shot to count. So you make sure that every lighting situation is done correctly. And, you know, in we had a Polaroid cartridge that we put on the back of the camera. Once we got the lighting where we absolutely thought that, you know, we wanted it, you know, we would do a Polaroid before we would actually shoot on film. And it's the same thing with shooting film. You know, I mean, in my day, it was probably much more expensive than in yours, but we didn't have, you know, we weren't shooting digital. You were shooting actual film. And so what happens is you're paying for every inch of film that you're using. So the things like today, I heard it on the set from Netflix, from the novella. The guy said, well, just keep shooting that you know, it's digital. Don't worry. We'll do it. We'll do it in post. We'll fix it in post.
Yeah.
And everything today is, hey, I'll fix it in Photoshop. I'll fix it in post. Mm-hmm. But there's only so much that you can do. Why do you want to do extra work?
Right.
If you can do it right from the beginning.
Well, that's the difference with it. Because like I started on film. My first movies were all shot on film. 16, I never shot. I shot 35 millimeter stills, but never actual motion picture, just 16. But with film, you don't have that option of unless you have the Polaroid back, of seeing what it looks like. You have to wait for it to come from the lab. And that's a day or two away. So you better get it right and technically know your stuff, because you're not getting that back. So that's so crucial. In these days, people just don't know. They don't understand at all that now you can just take a selfie. I don't like it, the next one. Or, you know, with your digital DSLR. Oh, I don't like it, take the next one. And like you were saying, like with digital, now they're like, just keep shooting and we'll fix it in post. We'll keep shooting. Whether, you know, you're shooting a movie or whatever, you can just roll. And then you have, if you shoot on film, you take two takes and shoot it properly. Now you're going to be shooting 10, 15 takes because you don't do it right. And then in post-production, you're just like maximizing all this work for yourself. Which is a headache and possibly still not getting it right because you're not doing technically anything proper. It's hard when you're old school, or like one guy on Twitter called me old man, you know, bitter old man. All I was talking about was like, I was talking about paperwork and people not doing paperwork these days. He's like, you're a bitter old man. I'm like, no, I just come from the days of doing things properly. That's all it is. And so if that makes me old bitter man, I guess so. I'm bitter that nobody does their shit right these days. Okay, I guess that's bitter.
That's bitter, yeah. That's what they'll call us.
Yeah.
If you expect somebody to do something correctly, what I hate to do is micromanage. So if I have somebody that's working with me and I have to explain to them every aspect of what they need to do, then they're of no use to me.
Right.
You know, I need somebody that has a head on their shoulders and can come in and I can say, this is what we're doing. And, you know, and he does it. And there's no questions. I don't have to say, well, look, make sure your camera is set to, you know, to this. I had photographers recently that wanted to contribute to the magazine. They contributed to the magazine. And, you know, I send them all the specs. It needs to be 3. It needs to be, you know, recuttable to 8.5 by 11, you know, or in the width, it needs to be 16:10 ratio. And I get nothing but 19:20, 1080, vertical and horizontal. And they're like, well, that's what the camera shoots. No, that's not what the camera shoots. That's what you have the camera set to, you idiot.
God.
And then they send me 72 DPI images. And I'm like, what am I going to do with 72 DPI images? And these are supposedly accomplished photographers.
Of course.
And it just drives me crazy. I'm just like, ah! But I want to get off of our rants and raves right now. I want you to tell us about Alterotic. I mean, that's one of the reasons why we're here today. I want you to tell us about Alterotic. How did it come about? What is it? What do you guys do?
So Alterotic is a company that does something no one ever, an adult's ever done. We shoot girls getting tattooed while doing scenes. And extreme tattoos, like vagina tattoos, butthole tattoos, their faces being tattooed. So basically the way the company came around, Sasha Inc., who created Alterotic, he's heavily tattooed himself. He is in love with the artwork of tattooing. So he created a company called My Tattoo Girls about 10, 12 years ago. And 5 years ago, he decided to bring it back and relabel it as Alterotic. He reached out to me. I was doing all my Pooba stuff with the porn star websites, and he asked me if I wanted to come in and help out, and I was completely down to do it because I think girls with tattoos are gorgeous and super creative and unique people. So I came in, and from that point forward, it just became something that been my passion the last 5 years, and helping a lot of alt models build a brand. They're still kind of the alt models in mainstream porn are stepchildren of the porn industry. They didn't get a lot of work, especially back four or five years ago. and we were one of the few companies that was strictly shooting them. Like Burning Angel was as well, obviously, and a few other companies. But for us, we went that step further where the girls got tattooed. And I would write into storylines, really funny storylines, really unique storylines. So we actually, we think it's a record. We tattooed a girl, 15 tattoos on a girl's face once while she's doing a scene.
Wow.
So yeah, we should, and we have some of our brand ambassadors have gone crazy viral. The first one that really went big was is this girl Amber Luke. She's an Australian model who's only shot for us. She's got her eyeballs tattooed. They're tattooed baby blue. So she's a beautiful blonde girl already, and now she's got these blue eyeballs. Not just eye. Well, the eyeballs are blue.
The whole eyeball, yeah.
The whole eyeball is blue. And we flew her out here, and she came out here a few times. We shot a ton of content with her. We're the only company she's ever shot adult with. And then that sparked other girls reaching out to us to want to shoot with us. We have a brand ambassador who's a tattooing porn star. Her name is Evelyn Ink. She's a very talented tattoo artist, and she's heavily tattooed. She's got a split tongue. There's a lot going on with her, and we write cool storylines for her. We probably have, I would say, close to a dozen brand ambassadors, and majority of them, we helped them get their first AVN nominations, if not wins. Last year at Alt Porn Awards, we won Best Alt Membership Site, which was huge for us because we're competing with big companies and we don't have budgets. Our movie, Ink Motel 3, just had 5 AVN nominations. And again, all of it was concentrated with alt models who were trying to build their brand. So to compete with big companies, competing only alt models, in an all content trade, to have 5 AVN nominations for one movie, 3 for another, is huge. Because that's on merit of our work, because we don't advertise. We're not sending anybody anywhere to, like, you know, for little services here and there, whatever people assume happens. It's literally, we love what we do. It's a passion. And it reflects on the quality of our work. And again, like we talked about earlier about the lighting thing, I try to shoot super artsy fun stuff with the girls, and the girls reach out to us, especially newer ones, because they see how we help these alt models that we have shot, you know, how we help them build their brand, and they want to be involved. Because at the end of the day, if you're a model, you want the best visuals for yourself to help you grow that brand. And that's kind of what we do. We did a star showcase on Misha Montana, who's my fiance, and it was originally started off as like she's getting this crazy pussy tattoo. She's got the alien from the
alien pussy.
Yeah, she's got the alien pussy. And it was literally, that was going to be like, we're going to do this fun thing with her. And then it spawned into something huge, because right after that shoot we did, we created our own AVN red carpet, because AVN Awards was virtual because of the pandemic. We created our own. Pretty, everybody was dressed up for the red carpet, and then for 5 hours we streamed live for getting this pussy tattoo and then doing a blow bang afterwards. So she, after 5 hours of getting her pussy tattooed and crying for 5 hours, she blew a bunch of dudes on set. The movie has been nominated for Best Showcase, Best Star Showcase in every award show across the industry. It doesn't win because we haven't thrown $50,000 into the movie or advertising. But to us, having nominations means that much more, because you get your nominations on the merit of your work. And that's the most important thing. And we're trying to spin this off, Misha and I, into a mainstream documentary now, because there's a lot that we couldn't put in the adult movie that we can't and wouldn't want to. So, but we're putting it into the documentary to follow these 400 days of her journey of having a stroke and heart surgery, and then she had another surgery recently, and her dad had a heart attack. She found him in the backyard, basically dying. Luckily, you know, he's okay, but a lot has been going on. So we have a lot of projects. Alt Erotic in 2021 did about half a dozen big events that nobody in the industry probably will ever do. We did it towards the end of the pandemic, where we did an event called Internet Killed the Porn Star. where the idea was Misha came up with this idea and I came up with a poster where a dead zombie porn chick is crawling out of the grave, and we have this beautiful horror style poster done. And it's basically the alt world is bringing back the porn star, because the girl crawling out of the grave, half of her is decomposed and it's like the normal half, and then the other part that's still all intact has tattoos on it. So we did like really fun events. We did a thing called Pro Penis Riders, which is basically like Pro Bull Riders World Finals, but ours was done at a bar that has a 10-foot mechanical penis, and we had a bunch of people come out and ride the penis, and we gave them trophies, and it went viral. And so we try to do like a lot of really fun stuff. The company is very unique. The handful of people that are involved are there because they love it. We have 5 girls now that have the ultra-erotic tattoo tattooed on them, and we have footage of all of it. In fact,
and they're brand ambassadors.
They're all brand ambassadors. Yes. And it's not like it's a cult. It's their idea. They're the ones who are like, I'm going to do this because I think it's cool. The logo's cool. What you guys are doing for the alt community is cool. So it's just one of those things that it's a labor of love in so many ways. I think women with tattoos, especially heavily modified, are that much more creative and expressive because they're expressing themselves with the artwork on their bodies. And it's fun to create with people like that because they're already like interested in creating and doing weird stuff. So we get to do weird shit together. And that's kind of what is in many.
And tattoo addiction, is that part of Alt Erotic, or is that another production company that's also dedicated to Inked Girls?
That's us. Well, that's our YouTube channel that we created a while back just to put our clean stuff on there. Originally, we were thinking of monetizing it, but when you're adult related, YouTube's not very friendly, even though we don't show anything on there.
They closed my channel down, and mine was just vanilla content from the shoots, but still closed it down.
That's how my YouTube channel's at 50 million views, but I can't monetize any of it because, God forbid, a porn star talks about anything on there.
Oh yeah,
but you could have people dying on YouTube. You could have underage girls running around in bikinis. That's all fine, but God forbid a porn star talks about something with clothes on. So our YouTube channel is pretty huge. Our one of our videos got 19 million views on it already. It's Amber Luke, the blue-eyed girl getting her butthole tattooed, but it's from an angle that is just interviewing her face while that tattoo artist is back behind
doing
her.
Doing his thing.
And that one went viral, down to like she got interviews with Fox News and other news sources because of her look. So we're just trying to do the coolest stuff and expand and try to help the girls get their brand out there, because the more they get their brand out, the better for us as well, because they're attached to it. And a lot of the girls, their first scenes or their only scenes are with us. It's like a win-win for everybody, and that's what we've been doing for the last 5 years or so.
Yeah, I mean, I won't even get into my passion for the Inked models, but I want to know, you mentioned Ink Motel. Now, yes. I was reading something about Team Svetlana and Team Ivan Dragon. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, you're Ivan Dragon, you have a team, and then there's Team Svetlana. What's that all about, and who is Svetlana?
Oh, okay, so Ink Motel is funny because I wanted to do a movie that was very artistic, lighting-wise. So we had this studio, and I wanted to do where every scene was lit really, kind of like film noir. And but it's a motel where there's tattooing going on and there's hidden cameras going on recording all this stuff. So the first one we did, it was just all like really creative, cool stuff, lighting wise. And then part two, I was like, well, let's put a little more storyline to it that's cohesive through the whole movie and incorporates the scenes from part one as well. So the second one was, I introduced my character. I only shoot non-sex roles. I don't perform. I'm a director, and I do funny skits where I don't mind being made fun of on camera. And so in part two, I introduced my character as Ivan Dragon, this Russian pornographer who owns this motel and has hidden cameras everywhere and has his cronies recording these girls having sex and getting tattooed and having sex and all kinds of stuff. Then part three comes around, and in part three, I meet Misha Montana in real life, and I write her into the storyline as now Ivan Dragon's real boss from Russia. So in part three, she comes to United States, and she's trying to take over my business because she's actually the leader. So she's Comandant Svetlana Komunistikova, and I'm Ivan Dragon. There's actually a scene in Ink Motel 3 where I'm tied down and she tattoos Suka on my finger, which means bitch.
Yeah, no, I'm well aware of that word.
Yeah, and she actually gets that tattooed on her knuckles that's still on her hand. Funny thing is, a few weeks ago, my mom finally saw her knuckle, Misha's knuckles. She's like, do you know what that says? And Misha's like, yeah, I know what that's. We did like the super, the Ink Motel 3 was one of my prides and joys of my career in adult, because one, I did it with Misha. Two, we did so much creative and weird stuff in that movie, and really kind of like worked in my character into it, that it let me express myself down to like I got nominated for best non-sex role, because there was a scenes where I'm just yelling in Russian and driving and screaming in Russian and dressed in all Russian, and the movie starts off with me eating caviar on top of a sliced pizza, so I'm like putting caviar on the pizza and eating it to the Russian music. We just really, really played it up because I'm full Russian, Misha is half Russian, and we're really proud of being Russian. And it's something that to us was like so cool to do, because like for Russians that live in Russia, Americans is like this novelty and like, whoa, what is the culture there? For Americans, that Russian culture is same. We're like, they always wear Adidas. They're always really weird. They're always fucking loud. They're always drunk. And so to us, we play into these stereotypes in part three, down to like, I created a fake pizzeria called Daddy Vladdy's Little Pizzeria. And it's like Italian writing, but in the middle of it is a picture of Vladimir Putin's face. It's a cartoon of his face. and there's like a delivery guy that delivers pizza, Daddy Vladdy's Little Pizzeria pizza. And I have the pizza box still in my living room here. So we do like all these real weird Russian stuff. Down to part four, we started shooting inserts of me when I was visiting Misha and Reno in the snow. I brought all my Russian shit, and it's me running around like I'm hiding in Russia from Svetlana, and I'm in Russia hiding out because she's in America now. Shot all this crazy, weird, fun stuff, and we decided to do a recruitment thing where Team Svetlana and Team Ivan Dragon are looking for new recruits for part four to create this battle between the two teams, this army. And my goal was every girl that reaches out needs to be part of Team Svetlana, because she needs to win. She's the girl. It's porn. I don't need to win. This is not real life. This is, you know, this is comedy. This is supposed to be fun. And we had a handful of girls reach out wanting to be part of quote unquote Team Svetlana. One did an amazing recruitment video. So we just wanted recruitment videos that we could play during the movie where Svetlana sits in this room with all these monitors watching these videos and recruiting girls into her army. And one girl, Adeline Gray, actually did this whole ice bath to get into Team Svetlana. She shot this whole thing herself, edited it all herself. She got on the phone with me. She was asking me what she could do. I'm like, go ahead, do whatever you want. She's like, I want to do an ice bath. And I go, why don't you call it the Motherland Ice Challenge? Because she was going to call it like the ice bath challenge. I'm going to call it the Motherland Ice Challenge. So this girl went and bought like the flag to put on the wall. She recorded herself going to buy ice and putting it in the tub. All this really cool stuff. Another girl like did like put blood all over her, which was really awkward. She's like, I want to be part of Team Svetlana. I'm like, we can't use blood in porn. She's like, but it's fake blood. I'm like, it doesn't matter. We're not using real blood anymore in porn. It's just been, for Misha and I, it's a labor of love project, because we get to express ourselves with music, with outfits, with screaming in Russian at each other. And everyone seems to want to be part of it because it's so unique and so different. You know, with everything that's recently happened, we're like, well, can we still do it? And then we're like, fuck it. We're proud to be fucking Russians. Just because what's happening over there has nothing to do with us. We didn't create this. And there's way more to this story than meets the eye. So people need to get over themselves. And so we're trying to figure out how we could do Ink Mattel 4 and what else we could do for it. Because I'm literally sitting in the living room looking at my rack of clothes that's all Russian Adidas jumpsuits that we bought created. So it's just like a fun project. It's really unique. It's really weird. The last two Ink Mattels have all been nominated for Best Comedy in pretty much every award show, just because they're so out there. And the beautiful part of what we do, since it's content show and everybody wants a piece of this stuff that's shooting for it, we are not limited to, oh, we just hired you for half a day rate, you know, or whatever. So now after like 5, 6, 7 hours, you're tired, you go home, and we never see you again. When you're shooting content straight with people, or people want to be part of the project, it's not, you don't have to shoot them all in one day. You could shoot them for multiple days. You could shoot them one day, come back a week later, shoot again. And that's how you create projects that have a lot more production value to it, whether it costs you nothing to do. So, you know, you have production value of people shooting on the beach or on the yacht, or you have production value of you shooting cool stuff with cool people at different locations. Because you just have access to these people for free rather than having to pay them 3-4 days and there goes your budget. So it's just a labor of love, and everyone that's involved, it's a labor of love for them. And a lot of these people have gotten their first award nominations through being in movies like Ink Mattel. And we just want to keep it up because it's a funny series. And it lets us do some weird shit. Like I said, we tattooed a girl, 50 tattoos on a girl's face for Ink Mattel 3. There's just a lot to it, and it's fun. And the characters are ridiculous, and the performers get to really express themselves with these characters. So I love it. It's something that I think about all the time. I have crates and crates of props for new scenes and projects when it comes to this movie. So yeah, it's just I gush about it. So I want to keep rapping because it's so much fun to do. But it's my current labor of love for sure.
Well, it definitely sounds like it. I mean, it's good to talk to somebody that's excited about what he does and who he does it with. You know, you get so many people that are just, you know, it's like just a thing for them. You know, there's no passion behind it. And listening to you talk about, you know, what you do is, it's amazing. And, you know, I was asked, I'm curious, this is something I'm going to, there's a question that comes at the end. I was recently asked in an interview if I felt that my model tendencies for the magazine typecasted the magazine into a particular genre. And I don't know if they were referring to the fact that I have quite a few Latin models or whether it's the fact that I have so many inked models. Mm-hmm. Has anybody ever asked you the same question? If, you know, you kind of like you get typecasted as a director or a producer with inked models, because that's who you work with, right? I mean, and yeah, you're good with that and you're happy with that.
It's interesting because the inked model thing came around only about 5 years ago with Alterotic. Before that, when I was directing for Anabolic, I shot a lot of first timers. So I was known as the guy who'd shoot the 18, 19 year olds and make them feel comfortable because, like, I wasn't hitting on them. I was shooting cool stuff with them. And then when I started, the whole ink thing started happening about, I don't know, maybe six years ago or so. I was directing for a company called Tom Byron Pictures, and I was doing a series called This Is Why I'm Hot. And basically, I spent my whole budget on these movies. So the first one was all big stars. Asa Akira, Christina Rose, Chanel Preston, I forget who the other girl was. And the second one was all brand new starlets, like new up and come, Jesse Andrews and Samantha Saint and Jinx Meggs and girls like that. And it was basically, I shot really, really, really cool teas with the girls, spent like an hour or two shooting cool teases where there's like video projections on the walls. And this is all me. It's just, I'm the crew person. I'm shooting all this stuff, doing all these things. And then the girl does it like a video diary interview and then has sex. And it was like with a creative teases and like the cool for it. When it came to the sex, I just wanted to shoot them on a white cove, because now it's going to be just about them. That we just did all this cool stuff with them for teases, interviews, and now it's just going to be sex on this all white cove. And then I made only a total of $800 between the two movies as producer, director, cameraman, lighting person, and editor, because I put so much into these projects. They were my labor of love. I didn't care.
You had no money left. You had no money left in the budget to hire anybody.
That's exactly it. It was just me, and I got $800 for those two movies. I was fine with it because they were amazing. So part three came around, and I went to the third one. It was going to be with ink and tattooed girls. So my cast was that I wanted to shoot was Christy Mack, Bonnie Rotten, Mason Moore, and Skin Diamond. And I thought those four girls would be amazing. They have great looks. And I was shut down. I was told, nope, tattooed girls don't sell. And you know what? I never shot another movie for that company. Because I was like, if you're not going to let me shoot something that I want to shoot, I'm done. And the crazy thing is, within a few months, Bonnie Rotten and Christy Mack blew up and ran the industry for years. So we could have had their first movies, or one of their first movies, but because the company, people who ran the company, were so old school thinking that they were like, tattooed girls don't sell. And I didn't do it. And so when Alterada came around, I jumped on the opportunity to shoot tattooed girls. Then I had a media person actually come to my set a few months before all my health stuff happened in late 2019. And he kind of asked me a similar question. He asked me, why tattoo girls? Well, you know, what makes them special? I know the question is a little bit different, but it's kind of like, since I'm pretty much kind of like in that world of tattooed girls, he asked me, why tattoo girls? And I explained to him, I go, look, here's the difference. It's like, let's say you're doing just a porno with non-tattooed girls and you call it blonde big boob bimbos or whatever. So now you know there's going to be four or five blonde big boob girls in it. So they're pretty much interchangeable. They're all going to have a similar look because they're going to be blonde and boobs. Obviously, the face will be a little different. The body will be a little bit different. Now, if you do it, tattooed blonde big boob girls. Every girl is not interchangeable because every girl has her own unique style, her own unique look, her own new unique way of representing herself with the artwork on her body or body modifications. So with tattoo models, every single one of them is unique to themselves because they're expressing their pain, their sorrow, their happiness, their memories, whatever it may be on their body. And they're telling their story. They don't even have to open their mouth. They could tell their story, but just walking in the room. With girls who are similar looking without tattoos, they walk in the room. You could go like, okay, she's hot. Oh, she's a bimbo. Oh, she's smart. Whatever it may be, but you're not getting a full story. You're just getting the book cover of a pretty girl. But when an alt model comes in the room, she represents herself with her body, with the artwork on her body. So to me, being typecast or being kind of like tunnel visioned into a person who shoots alt models, I don't, because I also shoot Nicole Aniston, and I shoot a handful of non-tattooed girls. But since I'm part of Alt Erotic, that's kind of like what I'm known for. I love it because alt models, I think, get the shaft in the industry when it comes to work. So they seem to be more receptive to doing concentrate or doing something artsy or creative that somebody who's doesn't have tattoos and makes stupid amount of money because everybody and their mother shoots them. Those girls won't even give me a time of day if I ask to shoot concentrate with them or shoot something cool with them because they're like, I'm too busy or I'm not interested. Alt models, different story. I mean, Suicide Girls blew up the alt model community. I'm not the biggest fan of Suicide Girls, not the girls in general, but what they did was they put alt models on the map, and which is wonderful. And this is kind of like all what Alt Erotic is trying to do, but on the hardcore side. So I have no problem with being kind of
typecast as that ink guy.
Yeah, and because ink models are fantastic, and they all have a story. They probably have way more interesting stories than any other model in the industry. So I don't mind that.
Yeah. I mean, I had a Mexican girl that I shot. She was 18 years old. She was from Cancun, one of the very few girls that you'll meet that was actually born and raised in Cancun like 10 years ago. And she came to the studio. She came to Mexico City, the studio, to be in our inked. I have Apparel's issue that I put out every year in June, you know, that features only inked models. And so she came to shoot for that. And I said to her, tell me about your ink. And she said, well, I'll sum it up like this. I wear my heritage on my body. And that's exactly what it was. If you look at each individual tattoo and you look at how they and how they connected, you would see, you know, she had, you know, the jaguar, she had the Mayan symbols, she had a little bit of Aztec on it. So yeah, she was carrying her Mexican heritage, and particularly from the Mayan culture, which is where she was raised. Cancun is the center of, not the center, but it is part of the center of the Mayan community. And you know, so that's what her thing was. And that's the way most tattooed girls and guys, they express themselves, you know, for me, I personally appreciate that. And see, do I have a tendency for inked models or for Latin girls? Well, I have a tendency for non-traditional. I mean, yeah, you can keep the blonde haired, blue eyed girls, you know, whether they have big boobs, little boobs, nice ass, a little ass, doesn't matter to me. I was never in my entire life, I don't ever remember being attracted to the blonde haired girl next door. I was always the Japanese girl, the girl from Korea, the black chick, the Latin girl, the Puerto Rican girl. I mean, I was always the non-traditional, you know, and yeah, and my family was, and I don't say this proudly, but my family was, they were prejudiced. They were racist, you know, and my sister and I, when we were young, my father used to say to me, if you ever bring a black guy or a black girl home, you know, I'll kill her first and then I'll kill you afterwards. You know, and don't you be coming back, don't you come be coming home with no spicks. Oh, you know, yeah. And I mean, and I mean, I grew up in the 60s, so mm-hmm. You imagine that, you know, what it was like back then. And but that was my thing. I was attracted, you know, to Latin models, Asian models, black girls. And I mean, it's always been that thing with me. So I'm sorry, you know, maybe it does reflect a little bit, but I have had blonde girls. I've had German models, blonde hair, black hair. I've had Russian girls in the magazine, a girl from the Ukraine in the magazine, Romanian girl. I've had models from all around the world. So I don't feel that I'm typecasting the magazine, but for myself, yeah, I personally do have a type of girl and model and all that, yeah, that I do like.
Yeah,
but it doesn't have to be, you know, that she has to be excessively inked. But I do happen to like it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, having a fiance that's got an alien pussy, it's really fun.
Yeah, I imagine. And you don't even want to turn the lights out when you guys are in bed. You're like, leave the lights on. I want to look at that alien pussy.
Well, the funny thing is, she walks around the house always bottomless, just because she always has. And then she's like, what are you looking at? I'm like, I just can't stop looking at it. It's so cool.
It's unbelievable. I think it's great. And I really do. And I mean, we've really run over time here, but I mean, we could talk about this shit all day. I mean, really, yeah. I could talk about this shit all day, but you know, we'll have you come back, and next time we'll have you come back with Misha and we'll talk more about her alien pussy and you know, inked girls and alt erotic.
Yeah.
And I'm really, now that we talked about Inked Motel, I'm really dying to see episode 3, mm-hmm. or part 3, and I'm waiting for part 4. I mean, I haven't seen Inked Motel yet, but I'm gonna watch it.
Yeah, it's it's very unique. It's very interesting for sure. It's funny, you know, like it. And there's subtitles, so if you don't know Russian, there's definitely subtitles in it. Yeah, so
yeah, I mean, that'd be great, and I'd like to write a little review about it. I'm gonna have to take a look at it and then write a little review about it, because I mean, I've looked at a couple of the videos from Alt Erotic, and I mean, I love them. I think that they're interesting. They've got a little bit of, they got theme to them. Yeah. And the girls getting tattooed and then having sex afterwards. And, you know, I was watching one that the girl, she actually paid for her tattoo, you know, with sex.
Right. Yes. Well, you know, we did a movie called Ho Hunters that was my movie I sat on for about 14 years or so. That was supposed to be a series, and we just ran out of time last year to do part two. But that one is probably the most unique thing I've ever done, just because the storyline-wise, it's the logo looks like the Ghostbusters logo, but it's a hot chick with big titties, ghost coming through the circle, and the backstory to it is that we Ho Hunters is a group of ghost hunters who find dead hookers who died in the middle of their job, so they're walking the earth in limbo because they never finished their final act. The way it works is we find them, we fuck them, we help them cross over to the big brothel upstairs.
There you go.
And so we did some. That one's got green screen. We shot actual twins. We recreated the Shining scene with the twins. Little tricycles moving around the room by themselves, all kinds of stuff. So that one we're also trying to bring back because there's just way too many fun things in it. And I'm in it as well. And the funny thing is I'm in it 70 pounds heavier before all my health stuff. And the new one's going to be me 70 pounds lighter. So I'm writing it into the storyline where I got attacked by a ghost and was in the hospital for 2 months.
Okay. So there you go.
So there's a lot to it. But Ink Motel, that's like the part four is going to be, it's going to be heavily Russian again, which is funny because everything that's happening right now, we're like, well, we're not going to hide from it. There's nothing to hide from. It is what it is. And so, yeah, I'm excited. You know, the funny thing is, literally a few weeks before all this happened, we put out a little promo video, Team Svetlana versus Ivan Dragon. And in my promo, at the end, they go, don't listen to Svetlana. She's not Russian. She's Ukrainian. And the camera cuts off. And I'm like, a few weeks later, I'm like, oh, there it is.
There it is. You said it.
Yes, I said it. I've said it many times. I have very strong opinions on this stuff before it happened. So before the invasion, and so if when people listen to me talk about it pre this, they'll be like, "Wait a minute!" I'm like, "Well, I'm speaking from experience, so leave me alone."
There you go. Yeah. And you know, and the whole thing is that you know we can't. People want to blame Russian people.
Right.
You know, Russian actresses and, you know, don't subscribe to this one's channel because she's Russian. And
yeah.
And it's not the individual people. It's like, you know, yeah. I'm not responsible for the Holocaust because I'm from Germany.
Exactly. You know?
And of course, what Hitler did was I'm embarrassed about what he did.
Yeah.
So, I mean, don't take it out on people.
You know, the crazy thing is also with it is that these sanctions are not hurting the rich of Russia. It's hurting the regular people of Russia. And Misha buys strictly dresses from this Russian designer who recently had to shut down her business because of these sanctions. So who are you hurting in the end? And at the end of the day, I tell everyone that brings it up to me. I go, if you want to know the truth about Russia and Ukraine, you talk to immigrants, especially Jewish immigrants, that are in the United States who ran from Ukraine and from Russia. And they'll give you their honest, experienced stories of what they think is going on there. And people don't, because you watch the news, you hear, and Putin's an evil dictator, no doubt about it. But there's so much to the story and so much to what, there's more Russians trying to escape Russia because of the sanctions than what's happening in Ukraine. And people don't hear these things because they don't want to know. And being a Russian Jew who was born in Ukraine, the anti-Semitism in Ukraine by Ukrainians that I suffered, and especially my parents, it's difficult because Putin might be full of shit about saying about the neo-Nazi stuff and that's why he's there, but it's true, it's there. It's beyond there. There are videos and pictures from there down to my parents get videos from friends of what goes on there. So there's just a lot to it, and to punish both sides, both people, the politicians, I'll be honest with you, politicians from both sides, they're the problem. And obviously not the people. And it sucks. It sucks because these sanctions are hurting innocent people, and God knows what's going on there now because their social media's turned off.
Yeah. Not only in Russia, in the Ukraine, but I mean, even the poor people in the U.S., the poor people in other countries are being affected because of the economic restrictions that the European community, as well as the U.S. community, are putting on Russia. Yeah. You know, and so the Russian people are suffering because there's going to be less of things. There's going to be less things that they can do. Exportations, you know, like your designer.
Yeah.
And like, you know, we feel it here. Even I'm in Mexico right now, and we feel it here. Gas price has gone up. The food price has gone up 25% to 50%. I mean, it you see it in the U.S. U.S. one of the worst periods of inflation in history.
Yeah,
and that's saying a lot.
Well, the thing that bothers me the most is that the homeless problem in the United States is atrocious, and the sad part is people don't care, because I went to a restaurant with Misha, and there was a thing on there that said, "Oh, you." It was called invisible ravioli, $5. And I'm like, "What is that?" Right? And you start reading it, and it's you buy these quote unquote invisible raviolis, and that $5 is being donated to Ukraine. So I go to the waiter. I go, "Okay, let me get this straight. So you want me to give you $5 to give to Ukraine?" "Yeah." I go, "What about that homeless guy right there across the street? What about that? That's an American, right there." American citizen, could have been a veteran for all we know, who hit on hard times. So fuck him, right? But we need to clout chase politically, so we're gonna do this. Like, I'm not saying those people are not struggling and suffering. They are. But what about what's happening right in front of your nose? And
that's exactly the point.
Like, LA looks like a third world country now, with so many RVs and homeless people and you know who's helping them out? People like myself, my friends. We, you know, buy food for them whenever we can and stuff like that. That the government should be helping, not sending billions of dollars to countries that politically they have something to gain with, not because
exactly
they care about those people. Because let me tell you, Iraq, Iran, and all these other small countries and the African countries, they're struggling as much as Ukraine is. Why are we helping them? You know, and that's the part that's like, it's so hard, because when you see like being at the restaurant, it's like, give $5. How do I know my $5 is going to Ukraine?
Exactly.
But I know my $5 could go to that homeless person if I walk across the street and buy him a sandwich. You know, and
exactly,
that's, it's crazy. And this is a fucking restaurant. You would think like, well, you're a restaurant, go feed that man right there.
You know, how much food do they throw away at night?
That's exactly it.
Back in the 80s, there was a bakery around the corner from where my studio was. And I mean, my studio was a big loft, and I had my bedroom there and my kitchen and my dark room. But I mean, I would go out at night when the bakery closed, and they would give me boxes of bread and donuts and pastries that they were going to throw away.
Yeah.
And I would take these down. Right down the street from my studio was the elevated platform for one of the subways or one of the trains. I forget which one it was. And there was a big homeless community underneath it, you know, what they called the carton community at the time, the cardboard community. And I would go there, and I would hand out the bread and the donuts and stuff like that. And one night, a police car came while I was there, and they said, "What are you doing?" I said, "Delivering some food to these people." And he was like, "No, don't do that. We want to get them out of here. We don't want them here." I said, "Where are they going to go?" "What is New York doing for the homeless community?" He's like, "Well, what are you doing for the homeless community?" I said, "Well, I'm trying to help give them a little bit of food."
Yeah.
You know? And they really appreciated it. I mean, I can tell you that the people that were there, they really appreciated it. Here in Mexico, it's a little bit different. My girlfriend and I, one time we went to get tacos. And when we were coming back, we saw a homeless lady with her kid, you know, sitting on the street asking for money. And so Lati said, "Hey, let me go in and buy a couple of hamburgers and fries for them, and we'll get a couple of drinks." I went and I got water for them and a Coke for the kid. And we came out to give them to her, and she said, "I want money. I don't want the food. I want money." It was like, my girlfriend was like, "Whoa, what are you talking about? We're trying to help you." And there she was like, "No, give me money. Don't give me food."
San Francisco homelessness. The homeless people in San Francisco, they're like, they literally come up to you, "Give me money." I'm like, "Oh, excuse me, what?" Jeez.
Exactly, yeah. So yeah, I mean, so she was in shock. I mean, she was just like, she couldn't believe it. And I said, you know, unfortunately, that you know, that does happen. You get people that are out here that aren't really homeless, and what they're doing is they're looking for money to, you know, to buy things. We had one lady that we saw by the Starbucks. I lived around the corner from the Starbucks in Mexico City, and there was a lady there. We walked by her. We were heading to the sex toy store, and we walked to the sex toy store to get some stuff for one of her live performances. And when we were coming back, when we went past, she was like, "Oh, we have to get something from Starbucks for her." And I was like, "Oh, okay, on the way back." And we come back, she's there with her latest iPhone, talking on the iPhone, sitting there on the street. So I was like, "What?" She had a better iPhone than I did.
Yeah, I hear it's, depending where you're panhandling in LA, you could make a pretty good living for a day.
Yeah, I guess you could, yeah. Yeah, the things that happen, you know, the things that people come up with, but
right.
But I mean, is there anything else that you want to add, Ivan, before we close out for tonight?
No, gosh, I think I ranted a lot, and sometimes I go on tangents, but no, I think this was great. This was awesome. I love sharing stories and opinions and everything else. So this was wonderful, especially talking to somebody who's also a photographer and who respects the love of photography and everything like that. So this was awesome.
Yeah, it's got to be a passion. I mean, if it's not a passion, it's just a job.
Right.
We have enough people that are out there just doing a job.
Exactly. Yes.
Well, that's great. It was so great to have you on here. The next time I have you on, we got to get Misha in here too and talk about all that's going on. One thing I didn't touch on and I wanted to touch on was that you guys do a toy donation drive to benefit cerebral palsy awareness in Las Vegas, don't you?
Yes, I've been doing toy donation drives for about 12 years now. I would do them for my birthday, which is in late March, and for the holidays. Plus, I've done donation drives for victims of domestic violence. This year, we decided to do it in Vegas because the place I used to do it in LA went out of business during the pandemic. So we know a place called the Nerd Bar in Vegas, and we were going to be in Vegas anyways, right around my birthday. So we decided to do a toy drive in Las Vegas, and March is Cerebral Palsy Awareness Month, so it was kind of worked out timing-wise perfectly, because Misha's son has cerebral palsy. So to us, it was kind of like it was kind of a match made in heaven in some ways, where we're going to be there. This place is super cool. It's going to let us do the event there, and it's Cerebral Palsy Awareness Month. So we did that. We raised a lot of toys, dropped them off at the hospital, and we do it twice a year. So the plan is to do another one at some point this year, maybe one for victims of domestic violence. And you know, might as well give back. I don't need toys. I don't need anything. But there's a lot of people that need help, or even just for people to understand what's going on in other people's lives. So yeah, that's kind of like what we do. We try to help in any way we can, whatever time we have.
Well, that's great. I mean, it's really good. I'm glad that you guys do that. And you know, there was so much of a stigma on those of us in the adult industry in the past. And when we start doing stuff, you know, like this, and not that we're doing it to make our image better, we're doing it, you know, from the heart. And you know, that's got to make people sit back and say, hey, well, they're not as bad as they seem.
Right. Right. Well, that's kind of like always been my thing within the industry, that I wish the industry would show a better light of itself, so people accept it more, rather than being what it is sometimes. So for us, this is why we're doing this documentary about Misha, because our plan is, and especially for her, is to humanize the industry. What we do within the industry and the people that are in the industry. So it's very important. And the only way that's going to work is if media outlets in our industry shows that side of the industry, which a lot of times it does not. You know, it's like pulling teeth for the two major magazines to do any human piece on people in the industry. It really is. You know, it's like, I just went to one of their websites yesterday just to see what the news is. And it's like, here's whatever, Barbie bucks 10.5, you know, doing her first scene. Hers is girl doing her first anal scene. I don't give a shit. Tell me a story about somebody, a human piece about one of our own. You know, to do something where it shows that we have more than just an asshole or a pussy that penises go in. There's more to us. And it sucks that the industry doesn't do it. I'll tell you, I know we're like over time, but I'll just give you one huge example, which sadly for Misha was a reality. I've told her, like, winning is it's hard to win in our industry if you're not working for the top companies. But getting nominated is wonderful. So she gets nominated, her movie gets nominated for Best Star Showcase. In that movie, we have hospital footage of her with a stroke, a day after her stroke. There's heart surgery footage, all this stuff. Her comeback scenes, 2 weeks after stroke, all this wonderful, wonderful stuff. Very emotional. She even shares about her son. She's never told anybody publicly about her five-year-old son with cerebral palsy. She talks about him on this DVD. So the DVD gets nominated for Best Star Showcase. The beginning of this award show, they have a big name performer doing this whole monologue about how people in the industry are human beings. And we're not just pieces of meat or just a whole, we're human beings. We need to understand that, humanize the industry. So we're sitting watching this and I lean into her. I go, this is a perfect opportunity for this award show to make a statement about, because they're trying to make a statement right here with this monologue. You know, and this performer's emotional and talking about this stuff. And I'm like, and I'm just going, if any award show is going to give it to you, this is their opportunity to do that. Fuck these movies that cost 50, 60, 70 grand, because every year there's a movie that's cost 50, 60, 70 grand. It's just a turnkey, spend a bunch of money, win a bunch of awards type of situation. This is a human piece with somebody who almost died and still is performing and doing scenes that are nominated. Her boy girl nominated for Best Boy Girl. Her blowbag nominated for Best Blowbag. And it doesn't win. And she got emotional, she was crying. And I said to her, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. You got nominated, this welcome, I basically said, welcome to the industry. You know, this is just what it is. Opportunity for this industry to do the right thing in showing that the industry is more than just about dicks and assholes. And then the industry constantly shows itself as only about the dicks and assholes for the most part. You know, you're like,
exactly.
Seriously, at what point are you going to do? When I was in the hospital for 2 months, I reached out to the same media outlets and I said, look, do a piece on me so people can understand that I'm an idiot who worked too hard and almost died. I'm not promoting anything. Don't even say who I work for. But I know way too many people that have passed away who had a ton of money in their bank account and died because they worked too hard. My story should be told. And I was told, well, let's see how it goes. And I'm like, well, fuck you then. You know, that's literally what I thought. So what I did was I started my own podcast in the hospital so I could tell my story. And it was literally to share. It's embarrassing. It's not a pleasant story. It's embarrassing. Look what I did to myself. I almost died because I'm stupid. Because I worked too hard, I didn't take breaks, I didn't listen to people when they told me to take breaks. And I think more people should hear my story because they'd be like, shit, like, I'm not immune to this. None of us are. You know, so that part is frustrating sometimes. So we're trying to, really hard to humanize what we can. And this is why I've always been about, I'm not trying to fuck you, and I'm not trying to fuck you out of money, because you're a human being, you're someone's daughter, you're someone's husband, you're someone's wife, you're someone's child, you're someone's parent. Who am I to step all over that? I'm nobody. I'm just a person shooting you, having sex, and then we all go our own ways. And if we want to be friends afterwards, great. If not, it's what it is. If the industry was more like that, I think it would be accepted more. And sadly, sometimes it's hard because you're going, well, a lot of people are, but more than not, a lot of people are not like that. Or at least the higher ups that can make that difference. And I'm not sure I went off on the tangent, but I felt like it needed to be said.
No, I mean, it's good that I think it's good that you said it, because yeah, I mean, we've all experienced it. You know, I know I felt abandoned by the industry when I had my stroke and when I had my heart attack, and I had nobody. I had nothing. I'm alone. My girlfriend left because, you know, she wasn't going to deal with it, even though I was in recovery. And then, of course, after I recovered, she called me and she was like, "Hey, I want you to do a photo shoot for me for my social media." And I was like, "Yeah, fuck you."
Yeah, Jesus. Oh my God.
Typical. Yeah, I mean, I wasn't bedridden. I wasn't crippled.
Yeah.
You know, all the equipment still worked and all my brain still worked. It was just that, you know, people think the worst, and then, you know, they didn't. Nobody wants to help you. Nobody wants to be around you. I had one family from a model of mine for many years. Her and all her kids and her mom and dad and her ex-husband, everybody came up to spend a weekend with me so I could so I wasn't going to be alone. And you know, I thought that was incredible.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you reach out to other people in the industry and outside the industry, fans or anybody else, and you ask for help, they just like, people are just like, "Oh no, just go shoot, you know, go shoot some photos, go shoot some video, you'll be fine." And, you know, it's not always about that. It's a matter of, you know, hey, at least you want to feel people support you, you know?
Right. Yeah, well, that's exactly it. You want to feel that the people, when they ask you, "How are you doing?" they're actually asking, "How are you doing?" not waiting for you to stop talking so they can talk about themselves. And that's a, you just encounter more of that than any. Which sucks, because in the community, it's so small. Their finger pointed at it from every direction. So why wouldn't help each other out?
Exactly. Why? We're a community. I mean, that's what I keep telling people. I said, you know, we're a community, but, you know, what can I say?
Yeah, it is what it is, I guess.
I guess. So, without anything else on your part, Ivan, I will say goodnight to all of our fans out there, and thank you so much for being on the show tonight. And
yes.
I wish everybody an incredible night, filled with erotic fantasies and incredible sex.
Yes, please. I need that too.
Cool. We all do.
Yes.